Juke Joint on Sunday after at from noon to three, and then
we have live people on here. We're not a station owned by Clear Channel that's playing variety hits. Oops, I mean electronic dance music. Oops, I mean country. And when you look at their webpage, it says meet our air staff, and it's got a picture of a computer on it. Okay, we have real people at this station. We don't run all automation or something. So, but I was going to say, so you have a lot of things coming up, and we have as our guest Donna Halper, who has been with us on the phone twice, and I said, you said, I can either come down live or do it on the phone again. I said, please come down live. You get to see our studios. It's easier to relate to you, so and it will sound better. And again, we'll show you the studios. She managed to find the way in. I had to kind of guide her.
Amazing but true.
That's right. Amazing but true. It's kind of interesting. There used to be a show on AM 740 WGIB called Let's Talk About Radio.
I miss that show. We used to have
Bob
a lot of
Bender,
fun doing that. Yes.
One-man station, and you used to say something like that. Amazing but true for the blank week or something. It's Let's Talk About Radio.
Exactly.
And as I've joked around, it was Donna on the radio on Sunday talking with a guy named Bob. So, Bob Bittner,
wow.
Bob Nelson.
Wow. What are the
what
odds?
What a coincidence.
What are the odds?
Jeez, and your name's the same way either way.
It's true. Well,
easy,
I've never changed it.
Easy
changed
as the breeze.
It.
I can't even try to imitate it. Easy as the breeze.
So for those who are listening to this
on a podcast,
they're like, "What is this? What did we just listen to?"
There was a show called Let's Talk About Radio. We're going to talk actually about Women of the Blues and maybe a little bit about radio. But you, Donna Halper, are a PhD.
I am.
You are.
Do I sound smarter than the last time you talked to me? I don't know if I had my PhD the last time.
A multiple author.
Yes.
Including Boston Radio and Invisible Stars. We'll talk about that a little later. And, oh, you helped this band called Rush get started. You know, nothing major.
Who are they? What are they?
Who are they? Yeah, Josh was playing them this morning.
I'm glad somebody was. I mean, maybe somebody will play them one day, you know?
Exactly.
Can you believe that it's going to be 40 years since I first discovered Rush?
Wow.
In August, it will be 40 years. And
wow.
If you had told me that I would still be in touch with them, still be friends with them, be in touch with their families, their management, 40 years. I mean, how many relationships do you have that last that long?
Yeah.
Particularly in our business. I mean, let's be honest. It's a very superficial business.
I'm recording this at home, but I just realized I haven't started my recording on here. Now we're starting on that recording. Anyway, well, I'll patch it together. This is radio. What is it? Freeform Radio?
Freeform Radio.
Oh, the good old days.
It just dawned on me.
The good old
days. I should have just kept it going.
Yeah.
But anyway, so 40 years since that whole thing with Rush, and you were at a station. Well, you know, I think we may miss this a little later. I've got some more music to get to, but we're going to have you on for a little bit, and we'll talk about a whole bunch of great things.
I thought you were going to say, now I'm going to start playing Rush. I'm like, wait a minute.
No,
this is a blues.
They do
a blues program.
I don't know.
Actually, they were very influenced by some blues performers. But who wasn't? I mean, when you think about the people in the 1960s and early 70s, a lot of them were influenced by Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. I mean, even the Beatles and the Rolling Stones have said repeatedly that, you know, they admired those blues performers, Bessie Smith, etc.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you not be influenced? That's
definitely
where rock and roll came from.
Right. That's what some of the things we're going to be talking about today. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to mention, I just played Selwyn Birchwood from the new CD, Don't Call No Ambulance. We heard the title track and also The River Turned Red. And I'm going to play a few more tunes, and then we're going to start the interview with you. So we want to get a few more tunes, and I've got someone named Jim Suler, and then the late Katie Webster from out of New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to be covering Who's Making Love.
Okay.
Little Johnny Taylor.
Yes.
And then we're going to play a tune called Lord, I Wonder, where she drops a bunch of names. So we'll play some other stuff. Now, you brought some stuff in. What is it? Billie Holiday, Bessie Smith, Ella Fitzgerald. And over here, you've got...
I got Big Mama Thornton
with
the original version.
That's right.
That's who Elvis was influenced by. You know?
I was thinking of playing also Sister Wynonna Carr with The Ball Game, which was in the Bo Durham. So
oh, yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff.
And we're going to talk about how Bessie Smith and Ethel Waters embraced radio and how radio helped them in a segregated era to get a white audience. And
exactly.
Other things of that nature. We're also going to talk about houses of prostitution.
Ooh.
Talk about.
The name of the show is The Juke Joint, and that almost was considered a little bit of a scandalous type of name for a
place. That's where people used to hear the hits. Yeah. I mean, black music in a segregated society. I know you want to play stuff.
No,
I'll
that's
let you
fine.
Play stuff,
no, we will.
In a segregated society, there were only a few places where you could hear the blues. I mean, yeah, you could go to a club, but the clubs were segregated. Mm. So if you wanted to hear some of the best blues or even some of the best jazz, it was kind of hard to do. So a lot of people would sell their records on the street corners, or if you went to a house of prostitution, which in those days was called a sporting house or a bawdy house,
ooh,
B-A-W-D-Y,
yes.
And they would very often entertain you, gentlemen, as you were waiting for the lady of your choice. They would have a performer down in the foyer, or they'd have a piano man, and it usually was a man, you know, playing songs for you. And sometimes they would play phonograph records. And of course, that was the big problem, because later, when radio came along, people were like, wow, where did you hear this great song? And of course, the announcers, oh yeah, was at a house of I heard it somewhere else. And you couldn't say that because no one wanted to talk about those things. Ah, those were the days, I'm telling
and
you.
Later on, you had some white DJs like Alan Freed who started playing the so-called race music.
Absolutely.
And helped to, you know, the birth of rock and roll and things like that when you think about it.
Very definitely. And we're going to talk about how radio, I drop my glasses all
that's
the time,
okay.
Which fortunately they're unbreakable, yeah. And that's why, because I drop them all the time.
Except when the lenses fall out.
Well, they haven't yet, thank God.
I've had that album.
No, indeed. But that's one of the things that's so interesting about all of this, because, of course, music has no color. Okay,
right.
We can say there's black music. We can say there's white music. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, yeah, Barry Manilow gets identified more with white people.
Yeah.
And you know, yeah, Bessie Smith got identified with black people. But when radio came along, suddenly you couldn't tell what color someone was by listening. It is a complete myth that, like, oh, yeah, I can always tell. Well, no, in a lot of cases, you couldn't always tell. And suddenly, here were these black musicians who would have been thrown out of places because of their color,
yeah.
And suddenly white listeners are writing, wow, these people are great, where can I hear more of this? So this got a lot of people's careers started, as we will discuss.
There's a scene in the movie Cadillac Records where Chuck Berry shows up, and he says his name, they go, well, you can't be Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry's white.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then the same thing happened with Louis Prima. They thought he was black. He was Italian.
Absolutely.
But, you know, so it's just a sort of a crossover type of thing or whatever. Let's play three tunes, and we'll get right back to you. We're going to go now to Jim Stuhler. This one's called Leave My Blues Behind. And I do it as a top 40 DJ, you know? It's not all
depressing.
Hey,
you got to talk like this.
I got to. Here it
talk
is.
I can't find a friend no matter where I turn. Got no satisfaction, a lesson I can't learn. I'm gonna get away and find some peace of mind. Oh, I'm gonna leave my blues behind. Darkness blocks my way, I can't see where to go. Lord, I got some questions, the answers I don't know. A price upon my head, out of time. Lord, I've got to leave my blues behind. I want to go where everything is free. I don't have to try being one but me. Till I find that place, I'll keep on asking why. Lord, I've got to leave my blues behind. Oh, I've got to leave my blues behind. Lord, I've got to leave my blues behind. good to me.
This part of our broadcast day was made possible by a grant from the Salem State Clipper Card. Your Clipper Card acts as a prepaid debit card at many locations both on and off campus. For all the latest info about your Clipper Card, especially where you can use it on or off campus, visit us on the web at salemstate.edu and search for Clipper Card, or stop by office on the second floor of the Dining Commons. The Salem State Clipper Card, your passport to campus and beyond.
More than 23 million of our children and adolescents are overweight or obese, putting them at higher risk for serious health problems. I'm Massachusetts State Representative Kim Ferguson. Women in Government, an organization of women state legislators, is working to promote policies that make it easier for children and families to eat healthy and be more physically active in our schools and neighborhoods. To learn more, visit womeningovernment.org. That's womeningovernment.org.
91.7 FM, WMWM Salem, here on the Juke Joint. And yeah, the same problems they were having this morning, I just had with CD3 down there, even though we've cleaned it. That was part of Katie Webster doing Lord, I Wonder. And then we heard all, thankfully, of Who's Making Love, both from around 88, 89, the album Swamp Boogie Queen. And before that, as I mentioned, it was Selwyn Birchwood with The River Turned Red and Don't Call No Ambulance. And, oh, also there was a Jim Suler tune that I got to enter in here, which I will. We have Donna Halper with us, and we're going to talk. We were talking about a whole bunch of things off the air. And you know what? We're going to switch you to that, Mike, because I think that sounds richer. So can you take that one and move that closer to you? Go ahead.
I can. It's, you know, having been in radio for many years.
Very full there now.
Yes.
So, okay. We're going to talk about different things. I'm about to play some Bessie Smith and also some Willie Mae, Big Mama Thornton.
Yes.
Stuff going back. Now, that tune, Hound Dog, everyone knows it from Elvis. There also, by the way, was an answer record called Bearcat by Rufus Thomas, if you remember that.
Uh-huh.
But let's deal with Bessie Smith. We're going to be playing Gimme a Pigfoot, which I've heard different people do, including her. What are some of the things about Bessie Smith? Now, this is back in like the 20s and stuff, right?
Well, one of the things that I write about in my book is about how radio really broke down some barriers of segregation. As everyone knows, America back then, and let's be honest, most European countries were in fact segregated. And while black people could entertain the white audience, they couldn't stay at the same hotels, they couldn't eat at the same restaurants, etc., etc. What radio did, as I started to say before, was it provided a boundaryless way where a black performer like Bessie could be on the air in one city and be heard all over the segregated South, where before radio, you had to go from club to club, from, you know, joint to joint, playing in places that in many cases were not the greatest places. And, you know, maybe you got an audience of 10 people, maybe you got an audience of 100. But suddenly, and it wasn't just Bessie, a number of black performers. And in those days, black performers are called Negroes.
Yes.
Okay? So back then, you're
reading,
that
is the official word. There's Caucasian, there's Negro, and so on.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you're reading about these Negro entertainers who have never had an audience of thousands and thousands of people in their lives. There's a black group that goes on the air in Portland, Oregon. They're traveling through. They're a vaudeville group. They've been playing on the segregated circuit, you know. And suddenly, they do a show on the air in Oregon, in Portland, and the next thing they know, they're getting hundreds of fan letters. They've never gotten hundreds of fan letters, and it's all from white people, because, I mean, Portland, Oregon is not exactly a mecca of people that are of color. And that at that time, the radio stations were a little nervous because they're like, if we play black music, will our white audience accept it? And the white audience was fine about it. They liked it. The people that didn't like it were the assorted moralists who wrote in newspapers about, you know, this music is obscene. It's going to ruin society.
The devil's
music. Oh, my God, it's awful. I mean, there was an article in 1923 by some, you know, head of the PTA who was, and I'm not dissing the PTA, God bless them. But the PTA was segregated too, the Parent Teachers Association. And you have this woman writing in, you know, if our children hear this music, it's going to cause pregnancy. I'm like, really? You know, listen to the blues, get pregnant. Okay. But it's 1922, 1923. This is what people believe. The artists, though, they aren't part of any of this. They just want to entertain people. Bessie had no idea when she went on the air in Atlanta, segregated city, and in Memphis, segregated city, that this would be a major way for her to be heard by millions of people. And the same thing happened in city after city. In Boston, here in greater Boston, John Shepherd III, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant traditionalist, etc. But he loved radio and he had an ear for it. And he just knew that certain kinds of music would go over well. And when Shuffle Along, which was the first black musical to play on Broadway, starting in like 1921, and then they took a touring version on the road. It played in Boston at a theater that's long gone called the Selwyn Theater. And John Shepherd III, who, like I said, his own personal tastes probably leaned towards what today we would call big band, you know, but he saw that like crowds were coming to the Selwyn Theater to see Shuffle Along. It did so well that they had to add like another couple of months worth of performances. Shepherd puts them on the air on WNAC, which today in Boston is WRKO. Yeah. For people that are listening from out of the, you know, out of the United States or from outside Boston. So he puts them on WNAC, and the original cast is heard singing the hit songs from Shuffle Along. I can only imagine, I mean, obviously I'm not around in 1922, neither are you, but I can only imagine what it must have been like for white listeners who couldn't get tickets to see the play, and then they turn on their radio and, oh my God, is there this much wonderfulness in the world? They can hear these great songs, some of which last for years. In fact, interestingly enough, one of the songs from Shuffle Along was I'm Just Wild About Harry.
Yes.
Now, at that time, it's about a guy in the, you know, in the play named Harry. But years later, Harry Truman.
20 years
yes,
later, yeah.
Harry Truman decides that, wow, everybody knows this song, and he makes it his theme song for his campaign. I'm Just Wild About Harry. But yeah, the people in Boston were listening to those songs back in 1922. And Bessie Smith was on the air doing, you know, live performances in 22. Ethel Waters, also another great performer, 1922-23. So suddenly, even in the segregated South, black musicians who couldn't get a sandwich are being heard all over the country. And not only didn't the Republic not fall, but people were just, wow, where can we get copies of this? And you have record companies say, well, okay, we better sign these people, and so on and so on. So it really changed society. I think it's kind of an under-researched part of early radio, looking at how radio changed the culture.
Yeah, and delving a little bit into folk music, people like the Lomaxes would go out to Muddy Waters' shack or something and
Absolutely.
Record him.
Absolutely.
And there would be radio airplay and, you know, record sales and things like that. And eventually that would spread. Also in country music. I mean, a big station WSM in Nashville and other ones, and WLS had the barn dance and everything.
Now,
it was the same idea.
But what's sad about that, though, in a way, is that people immediately turn it into a stereotype. Okay,
my
book is about social history, like about how radio and television changed society and how it affected people. And, of course, you start reading in newspapers and magazines about how black people are just born to be entertainers. They're born singing and dancing. I mean, they just come out of the womb, ready to enter. I mean, you can actually read this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just so bizarre. But I have the feeling that...
Well, it's a stereotype. It's like if you were to meet a dwarf and go, oh, hi, you must be in the circus.
Yeah.
Stereotypes.
And today, people with dwarfism really don't even like to be called that. Okay?
I know,
they like to be called little
or whatever,
people.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And that's not trivial, by the way. A lot of people make fun of political correctness, but I really do think that some of these stereotypes are rooted in what you are called. And in many cases, the people being called had no agency. They were just
This
is what we're going to call you.
You're
okay?
Right.
And, you know, like saying to somebody, oh, he Jewed me out of my money. Well, you know, excuse me, he didn't Christian you out of your money or Buddhist you out of your money?
Like the conditions down south, there's a Stephen King novel, 112263, about someone who goes back in time to try to stop the JFK assassination. He winds up down south and he goes to a service station or whatever to use the bathroom. And then he sees what the arrangement is for so-called colored people.
Yep.
You got to go in the back, cross over, do it in the... That's what, and he was shocked, but that's the way it was in the 40s and 50s.
At radio stations, even the big stars, okay, the big stars who were of color, they had to use the freight elevator.
Yes.
I mean, it was just outrageous. And yet people defended that system. So as I said, I don't mind that much today when people, oh, I don't want to be called such and such. Well, fine, because in many cases, you had no choice over that name anyway.
Right.
So if you want to take it back and say, no, I'd much rather be called, you know, African-American you know, the expression that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, which gets me crazed, you know, to Jew someone out of their money or gypsy, to gyp someone, you know. So these stereotypic phrases, they're not just political correctness. They're a reminder of a but they're a reminder of a time when we didn't have respect for people as people. And to some degree, radio broke some of that down. Not all of it, because the announcers still had to be white men with deep voices and this and that. There were, in 1936, someone did a survey. There were three black announcers in the entire country. Okay? And it wasn't because they weren't qualified. It was just somebody decided somewhere, I guess, you know, God came to them in a vision and said, you know, all announcers must be white males with deep voices.
Yeah. But now, eventually there were stations in places like Chicago and Memphis. There was WDIA, which actually called itself the mother station of the Negroes, that would have black staff.
Absolutely. But what's sad about that is that in 1930, a guy by the name of William F. Tompkins, I believe, tried to buy a radio station. He was an African-American, back then a Negro. He owned a newspaper. He was successful financially, and the FCC, which was then called the FRC, the Federal Radio Commission, wouldn't even look at his application.
Yeah.
And yet, people that were white, who had very shaky financing, they were able to get stations, but he wasn't able to get one. So we don't really get a black radio station until 1949. 48 is when WDIA goes on the air, but it's owned by white people. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But the first owned and operated by black people radio station goes on the air in 1949 in Atlanta, WERD. And it's owned by Jesse Blayton and his son, Jesse Blayton Jr. And Jesse Blayton is a very successful businessman. He's an accountant. I mean, he's got tons of money. But it's a sad commentary that it doesn't take until 1949 before an African-American can finally own a radio station. But what had been happening before that, though, is this creep, creep, creep of more stations playing black music.
Yeah.
Because it became real obvious to stations that people like this stuff. And the fact that the audience didn't really care what color the singers were.
Yeah.
Okay, you had a few races. They're like, what are you playing that kind of music for? Yeah. But for the most part, people were like, oh, you know, Dinah Washington, you know, on Top 40 Radio. Oh, it's Dinah Washington. That's nice. But she'd been performing before that. And so many other people, you know, Lena Horne. You had so many performers like Billie Holiday, okay, who had created a market for themselves with the black audience and were very much embraced by the white audience. Yeah. So we were talking Big Mama Thornton. You got...
I got Hound Dog. I'm going to play that in a minute.
Yes.
We're going to play a Bessie Smith tune,
yes,
and then we're going to play Big Mama Thornton. You mentioned Billie Holiday.
I did.
I've never seen it, but the movie Lady Sings the Blues, I believe, is about her.
Yes.
You two did a song called Angel of Harlem about
what
her.
What a tragedy about her life being destroyed by drugs.
Was it drugs?
Definitely drugs.
Definitely, yeah. There actually was a song she did, I believe, called Strange Fruit that was about blacks being hanged, being
absolutely
lynched.
Absolutely, about racism.
That's right,
absolutely.
About racism, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, there were some other performers who were able to cross over to the white audience even years before, like Ella Fitzgerald, et cetera.
Louis,
you know,
Jordan
another
one.
Oh, yeah. So I think we have a very rich musical heritage, and I'm just delighted that you're doing what you're doing. I'm not saying because I want to stroke you, but I'm very serious about this. Blues and jazz are two forms that may not have a wide audience, but they have a very passionate niche audience, and so much came from them that I really think you have to study them and you have to really know about them, because so much of what we play today, whether it's rock, whether it's rap, whether it's R&B, it all came from blues and jazz.
Yeah. And, you know, we know people will listen to us. There were some Some of the big commercial stations may have had a blues show. They got rid of it. GBH had a blues show for years. Mae Kramer, God bless her heart. They decided to put news on and everything. But there's stations like us. There's MFO. There's some other ones in the area that do still have blues shows and keep it alive. We've got blues festivals. We've got all sorts of things going on. Things, thankfully, are better for these artists that are, like, you know, appearing at all the different festivals. But back in the, like I was mentioning off air, B.B. King Blues Museum in Indianola showed you what it was like to be a black person touring back in those days with B.B. and stuff in the 40s and 50s.
As I was telling you, there was a very famous comedian and performer named Burt Williams. Mm-hmm. He was black. And even though he was making what in those days would be the equivalent of millions today, he couldn't get a sandwich in most cities.
Right.
And if it weren't for his friendship with Eddie Cantor, and I mean, Eddie Cantor was a famous singer, movie star, radio star, TV later on. I mean, my God, he spanned so many generations. But he was friends with Burt Williams. And in many cases, he would have to be the one that said, okay, fine, you know, let Burt in. And Burt found that humiliating. I mean, on the one hand, he was very pleased that Eddie took his side. But, you know, it just made him feel bad that here he was, a headlining act in vaudeville, well-respected, and yet he couldn't get into a club without a white guy saying, hey, you know, this guy's okay. So I think we've come a long way from that.
And this was many decades after the Emancipation mm-hmm. Proclamation and a long time after the Constitution that said all men, meaning all human beings, are created equal and blah, blah, blah.
No, actually, let's be
honest,
Bobby. Back then, it meant all men. Sorry.
That's true.
It really did.
But what I mean is what it's supposed to mean is all human beings.
It certainly, yeah. But it would take a while because, of course, we could get into a conversation about the suffrage movement and women getting the vote. I'm giving a talk.
The Civil War and things like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm giving a talk in a couple of weeks in Quincy at my local library, the Thomas Crane Library, about the media's attitude about women politicians. Mm-hmm. And you want to see something that, to some degree, hasn't changed at all.
Right.
I mean, I can show you newspaper articles from the 1920s about, oh my God, I don't like the way she wears her hair. How can we take her seriously if she wears her hair like that? You know? And here we are. It's 2014. And people are still like, oh my God, I don't like it. She's got wrinkles and this, you know. However, oh, she seems like a real ditz. That was an archetype in vaudeville, the dumb Dora. Yeah. It was assumed that women were just kind of dumb. Okay.
These days, there's more like dumb husbands, like the Homer Simpson character.
Oh,
that,
we've turned it on its
head. They've turned it on its head,
yeah. But those kinds of stereotypes, you know, the good news about media is that it gives people a chance to be heard. The bad news is, in many cases, it spreads stereotypes and myths and spreads them farther than they might have been spread before. But enough talking to me. You should play some tunes.
Yeah, we're going to play Bessie Smith and then Big
Mama
Thornton.
And then we can talk some more.
And then we'll talk some more, okay?
Yes.
This should be Bessie Smith and Give Me a Pigfoot on the Juke Joint, WMWM Salem.
Tight, they all congregate at an all-night strut. from loneliness. And there are
WMWM Salem, unfortunately, this is a stubborn CD player. We're going to hear some jug band music in just a minute. Here it is, number 17.
Out 44 pairs of socks and have them on the line. You know, I can start you 9 2 dozen shirts, but you can count from 1 to 9. Well, I can slip up a great big dip up a log from a dripping can, throw it in a skillet, do my shopping in my back, or it melts in the pan, cause I'm a woman. A compound on my face at the same time. You know, I can get all the stuff, go out and sleep till 5 a.m. and then jump in bed at 5, get up at 6 and start all over again, cause I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. Let me tell you again, I'm a woman, you know I'm gonna break the spell. Well, if you come to me hungry, you know I'll feed you full of my grits. And if it's loving you all night and kiss you and give you the
taking me back with that song. There are some people listening on your, like, your podcast and your stream and so on, and that are like, what was that?
I play that a lot, actually.
But they may not necessarily know about it. And when I was growing up, folk music was huge in Greater Boston. It was huge in a lot of cities, but it was particularly huge here. And you could go to some of the clubs and see a very young Joan Baez or Bob Dylan.
Playing at the Club 47, which became Passion.
Absolutely. And you could see Tom Rush, which was no relation to the rock band Rush. This was a really great folk and folk rock artist, Tom Rush, who is still around and who still entertains. Guy is just amazing. And the Even Dozen Jug Band, I think, was where Maria, as Maria D'Amato, got started, and I could be wrong on that.
Actually, I think Ella Naomi Cohen, otherwise known as Mama Cass,
yes,
was in the Even Dozen Jug Band.
Because she was in some jug band before Queskin, and I'm completely blocking on the name of it.
I take it back. I think you're right. I think she was in the Even Dozen. It was the big three that had Mama Cass.
Yes.
And they did a great blues tune.
Absolutely. And Maria D'Amato, she married a folk artist named Jeff Muldoor. They ultimately got divorced. But, you know, she joined up with the Jim Queskin Jug Band. And Jim Queskin was a local guy who did a lot of songs that really spanned across a number of genres. He did rock, he did folk, he did jazz, he did blues. And that song that you just played, I'm like, I played that when I was on the radio. That's just, you know, because I'm a woman, W-O-M-A-N. And that really focuses on some of the things that blues songs did that had the critics so upset. The euphemisms. You couldn't come out and talk about sex back then.
Right.
You know, but you could hint about it. You know, I'm going to make a man out of you. You know, like, well, what does that even mean? Well, people knew what it meant. Using terms like hound dog, you know, what's a hound dog?
Yeah.
I'm like a one-eyed cat, you know, hanging around a seafood store. Yeah, people knew. It was a different language almost, the language of euphemism.
My pencil won't write no more.
Yeah.
Don't squeeze my banana,
absolutely, et cetera. Absolutely. Yes. And the educators were just beside themselves. It was like, this is teaching young people about, well, they sort of already knew about it. And this would get into rock and roll, too. You know, the Little Richard, good golly, Miss Molly, you sure like to ball.
Mm.
Now, I got to tell you, I was a real innocent kid back then. The only ball I knew was either playing ball, you know, like baseball. I'm like, wow, she's talking about a girl that likes sports. That's kind of cool. I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, it was a much more innocent age. Yeah. And but that whole idea of trying to get away with as much as you could on the radio was just amazing. So, yeah, Big Mama and the original version of Hound Dog. So many of those artists today are all but forgotten, but their songs live on. And as I said, thank you for playing them.
That's why I encourage people, if you travel, if you get down to a place like Memphis or Chicago or something, there's all these museums that can, or you know, you can just get some books, watch some stuff on TV or the computer or something. There's a lot of material out there that can tell you all about the history and things like that. Because some people, they get into blues the back route, they might say, because they listen to rock and roll and they go, well, you know, maybe I'll check out this. You know, I like the Rolling Stones. They got influenced by Howlin' Wolf and, you know, Little Red Rooster. They did this. I'll check out some Howlin' Wolf. I'll check out some Muddy Waters. There's where the name came from.
Absolutely.
He had a song and inspired the magazine as well, Rolling Stone.
Absolutely. By the way, your technical difficulties are also kind of bringing me back, because every DJ, when I was growing up, the DJ's nightmare was that the record would be skipping and they'd be down at the men's room or the ladies' room, and they'd be running back to the studio because we had speakers all over the station so you could hear the record that was on the air. And we would have nightmares. You know, you'd have this dream.
I have nightmares, literally, where that happens.
Yep.
Mine is the song running out, and you have nothing ready, which just happened.
Yep.
It happens a lot, and you try to have things queued up, which I think I will, while I have a chance here, we'll get some things in and all that.
Now,
we
used to play cartridges, and they would have on them how the song ended. It would say, like,
Q,
fade.
The letter Q, and then,
yes, it would say fade or cold end.
Yes.
You know, cold end is like, bam, it just ends, and you better be ready for the next one. And then, of course, equipment not working and, you know, just cart machines jamming. This is all just kind of part of live radio or live TV, for that matter. Yeah. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Got to be prepared for it.
I was making reference before, and I was kind of hinting at, you know, the fact that Clear Channel bought the old Boston Phoenix radio station. First of all, here's the Boston Phoenix and everything saying, oh, Occupy movement, oh, you know, we hate these big corporations. So, oh, now we hear Stephen Minich is going to sell the station. He sells it to Clear Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for $14.5 million. First, they put on something called The Harbor with just a bunch of variety hits and rock and roll. Then they went to electronic dance music, and they got a bunch of followers.
Yep.
So a week ago Friday, all of a sudden, there's
country.
Rumors they're going to go to country. And for now, at least, really no DJs. They're going to have some later. And there's a lot of people that are upset. It's a business, and sadly, we don't always get, like the song said, you don't always get what you want. All these people, they might be, oh, yeah, well, just you can get it on this app or something. You can get it this way or that way. But they were getting it on 101.7. And admittedly, there's a lot of people, and this is hysterical. I was on Twitter, and there were a lot of people praising it, and I said to myself, I wonder how many of these people are paid by Clear Channel.
Hello.
As a matter of fact, a guy named Matt Siegel was on there. Oh, have you checked out our new sister station? And then there was someone else, you know, and she had at Kiss108 right in her, like, Twitter handle.
Yep.
And they were actually taking advantage. Yesterday was the big country fest for WKLB. And they were saying on this new station, The Bull, thank you for making us your soundtrack for Country Fest. They were literally mentioning the other people.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and there were people saying, well, I can't really pick it up too well. And I said, well, that's because they're only 6,000 watts.
Yep,
and the, other
the mice are running the treadmill. Well, the other thing that's interesting about all of this is kind of inside baseball. People are sitting there scratching their head saying, what is he talking about? What is she talking about?
I think people know what 50,000 watts is, but
But what we're talking about is how formats change, how tastes change, how I can remember growing up here that country music was dead in the water here. Yes, you'd have a few shows, you know, there were a couple of clubs like the Hillbilly Ranch and this and that, but that's the point. The perception was that it was hillbilly music. And in the 50s, we had this very interesting blending of country and rock. It got to be called rockabilly, and the Everly Brothers, of all people, popularized it, as did several other people. Elvis did some rockabilly. But for the most part, if you wanted to have your station die a painful death in Boston, you did country music. It just went nowhere.
WDOW, WBOS.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That started changing in the late 80s, early 90s. But it wasn't until then. The rest of the country, country radio is huge all over the United States, okay? But in Boston, it was like, forget about it. We just were not into it. But now, you really do have powerhouse country radio stations. And if you had told me growing up that the number one station in Boston would be a country, I would have said, yeah,
a couple months ago, it was.
Yeah.
And Greater Media knew how to put that station together. And there are a lot of people, young adults especially, who like it. They like the ballads. They like some of the party, you know, Red Solo Cup, those type of songs. It appeals to them. But just to show you how not to do it, I was up in Maine once, and that was the very first time I heard Red Solo Cup by Toby Keith. Here's how they did it. The song ends, and there's a woman's voice saying, Toby Keith, Red Solo Cup.
Yep.
Like the old CGY used to do with the rock garden.
But
oh,
you gotta
thanks
be,
for putting
you gotta
personality
be,
into it.
That's the point. That's why radio is in trouble. To me, the saddest thing about radio today is the lack of personality. You mentioned Matty Siegel. God bless Matty.
30 years plus.
That's my point. Matty is one of those announcers who really loves talking to his audience. There used to be so many of those folks. Whether you like him or hate him, Howard Stern, he was personality all over the place. But you used to be able to hear personality announcers on every station in every format. Today, you've got so much that is just automated. You've got a young generation, God bless them, that are so used to Pandora and Spotify where they don't have to even worry about a DJ. And you've got stations playing 18 to 20 minutes of commercials and wondering why they have no listeners.
Yeah.
I don't think radio's dead. I think that the way it's delivered is not as user-friendly as it was. And I hope that they can bring it back to user-friendliness because I am a firm believer that there is no more intimate medium than radio. Radio, when it's done well, is like a best friend.
It exactly is. It is true. I have satellite radio, and you can hear any number of a type of all blues, all country, whatever. I also have HD radio. Oh, you can go to 96.9. They have an HD2 that's all Irish, etc. It's okay once in a while, but you got to have someone to connect to. You've got a DJ who can talk to you and tell you, hey, this is going on. You know, at 3 o'clock, it's going to be Ronnie DeShane's playing off of New Derby Street at the Lobster Shanty. At 4 o'clock, there's another guy who we had on here yesterday, John Tamilio, who's playing at Murphy's. And we had John Tamilio sitting right where you are
and
playing with a guitar and playing.
Yep. And that's the other
live.
Thing. That's the other thing that radio did that hadn't been done before. Radio created national hits and national conversations. I talked earlier about how Bessie Smith got on the radio on a couple of white stations and really expanded her audience, ditto for Ethel Waters and a number of other performers. But years ago, when... You know, I hate to keep going back to when I was growing up because, you know, the good old days were not perfect. They had a lot of problems. But I remember sitting and listening to the hits on Top 40. Casey Kasem just passed,
yes,
you know.
Exactly.
And I remember growing up with shows like that, countdown shows. His was not the first. The first countdown show was on the air in 1935.
There was
Your Hit Parade, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. But the fact is, people would sit and they'd be, I wonder what song is going to be the number one song. It really mattered. You wanted to hear your favorite songs. You wanted to hear the DJs telling you about what was going on. That is something I really miss. And
coming up next, we've got the artist who,
yeah,
and you want
and
to know.
Telling you a story about
yes.
that artist. You know, like, did you know that when the Everly Brothers did such and such, they were influenced by so-and-so and playing a little bit of the original song and then a little bit of how the Everly Brothers did it or whatever, you know. And it just, to me, what Casey Kasem did really, really well was that form of storytelling. Because if you're going to be a good communicator, and okay, fine, I'm a professor of communication, so I sort of have a horse in this race. I want to see people be good communicators. Tell me a story. And I don't mean story like a lie, okay? I'm saying whether you're a politician, whether you're a business person, nothing bores me to tears more than taking out your PowerPoint presentation. It's like, oh God, here's another slide, and here's another slide, and here's another slide. Nah, don't do that to me. Tell me something that matters to you and make me feel like it should matter to me as well. Bring me in, apprentice me into the story. And that's what Casey did. Casey was one of those announcers. Arne Ginsberg was another one who was very good at that. Okay? In talk radio, David Brudnoy was great at doing that. They would take a subject that you looked at it on paper and you're like, I'm not going to care about this. And by the time you were done, you were like, wow, I need to know more about that. Because they did it in a way that didn't talk down to you. They didn't insult you. They treated you like an equal, like they were glad you're listening. Yeah. There's people listening to us right now. I'm glad they're listening. Thank yeah. God that they are.
You know, I can listen to Jordan Rich. You've been on Jordan's show and
yes.
everything. He'll say, coming up in the next hour, we're going to be talking to the author of a book on Bob and Ray. And it's like, okay, that sounds good. And I listen to it. And then coming up next, we've got this. And at first, I think, well, I don't know if I'm interested. But guess what? I start listening. It's like, wow, this is interesting.
Absolutely.
Like you say, you know?
It's a very easy way of education. So, you know, for those that have no idea what this is all about, tell them what station this is and tell them what you're doing.
Okay, it's WMWM Salem, Broadcast Service of Salem State University. We actually started out in 68 as a carrier current station on 640 kilocycles, you might say.
As did many
as
college
did many.
Radio stations.
The one Howard Stern was on over at BU, right?
WEC, absolutely. Yeah. And the Northeastern University station was WNEU. And it
when
too
you
was
were,
a carrier
when
current.
When you were
station?
On, was it carrier current or was it the
it was just making the change as
it became
I
91.7
yes,
FM and then
correct.
It moved to 104.9.
It became yeah. an FM station in the summer of 1970. I was around when
you
they did the paperwork
yeah, right.
for all of that. I was yeah. I was the first woman on that radio station. And when I first got started, all they would let me do is just segue records because they believed that somehow hearing a woman's voice would just be, oh my God, the Republic is going
They're
to fall.
51%
you know?
Of the population.
Yeah,
I mean, who
yeah.
cares about
See,
that?
See,
right?
I'm serious. I don't think most people care. Black, white, gay,
yeah.
straight, male, female, cat, dog. If you're entertaining, I think most people will embrace you.
Yeah.
I'm very serious about that. I mean, look at Ellen DeGeneres, okay? Now, if you had told the average person 40 years ago, oh, yeah, you know, the number one talk show on TV is going to be a black woman, Oprah, and a mm-hmm. gay female, Ellen.
Yep, right.
And everybody would have said, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Except today, it's like these people are big, they're well accepted, everybody loves them. And that other stuff that we were all so worried about,
mm-hmm.
it's like, so what? so I grew up.
They were saying the same things about rock and roll.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going.
It was evil.
Supposedly, if I listened to rock and roll, I told you earlier, you know, I was going to get pregnant. I was going to drop out of school. I was going to become a juvenile delinquent. There was a big article I found from 1957 where the CYO, God bless them, the Catholic Youth Organization. I'm not insulting Catholics. It was just this is where this particular thing came from, where the head of the CYO issued a statement saying that kids should not go to disc jockey dances because it encourages vulgar dancing. I suppose, but it also encouraged people to just have fun, and there were adults present, and what's the harm of going to a DJ dance?
Great movie. There are actually two versions of it. Hairspray, the John Waters
original.
And then the musical is great as well. And in each case, it's based on the Buddy Dean Show in Baltimore.
Absolutely.
Which, hey, they had a Negro Day one day out of the month or something like that.
Yep, one day a month.
With Motormouth Maybelle and things like that. And
that is based on fact.
It is based, yeah.
They would play black songs.
And eventually it got integrated
eventually.
But back then it's like, well, we have it one day. Okay, you know.
And the idea was that, oh, my God, black kids and white kids might dance together.
Yeah.
And I mean, who knows where that would lead?
If you look close in the original movie, Divine is actually dressed as a man.
Yes.
He was a man, Harris Glenn Milstead. Absolutely not. We can't have that. So
I know. And the interesting thing, and I've said this before, and I'm not
in
the
one
first
scene.
One.
In the rest of the movie, he's dressed as a woman.
I've said this before, and it's not anything new, but if you take a bunch of babies and put them in a playground together and have them be all different races and both, you know, boys and girls, you know what? They'll all play together. Yeah. And the white kids will play with the black kids who will play with the Chinese. And nobody cares. It's like, who's got the toys and who's on the swing next? Yeah. And they don't care. How do we lose that?
I don't know. But getting back to our station, in 76, we went to FM with about 10 watts. And a couple years later, we went to 130. We're still there. I never dreamed when I first started here in 81 that someday people could hear me in China or who knows where or England because of the internet. You know,
absolutely.
That's what we've got these days. And we can tell people about the latest releases. People can shop for them online.
Yep.
If they like something, they can download it right away. They pay the 97 cents or whatever.
That's what's amazing to me, too. You know, as somebody who lived in all of these generations, you know, not like I'm so terribly old, but I mean, having come from the traditional old school way of doing radio, and now I'm sitting here and you're going to put this up online, and there's going to be people from England that are going to hear it, and people from Scotland, Indonesia.
Yeah.
If you had told me, when I was growing up, that would be possible. Maybe on shortwave, maybe on ham radio, you know. But
well, these days, people can do a live show and make it available as a podcast. There's Mark Maron that does the WTF one. There's one I listen to, Stu's Show, stushows.com, Stu Showstack. He'll have people on like, Stan Freeberg, Dr. Demento, the kids that were in the Christmas Story movie. He had Kyle Reiner on and
but,
so on.
But
he can swear on his too if he wants.
I'm not going to do. Yeah. But on the other, while I'm happy about all of that, as I said before, I miss the idea that we're all just like together listening to our favorite radio station. The fact that we can all just share the same program, listen from coast to coast. You know, Casey Kasem, when he went, Casey coast to coast. And he was. I mean, he was on the air. The armed forces carried American Top 40. People all over the world. Now we've got a lot more solitary listening. Okay, I'm listening in my house to my favorite songs. But there's something about being connected to people all over the world, just listening together, enjoying it together. So thank you for letting me on your show and for, just making this available to people.
Yeah. I'm going to play a few more female artists right now while
we're
at it. Actually, one of them is a fairly recent one, Geneva Magnus. We have her new CD. But what I've got, if I've got the
assuming things work.
Exactly. We're going to play another Bessie Smith tune. This is from the Complete Recordings Volume 1, Disc 1. It's Tain't Nobody's Business If I Do.
The Empress of the Blues.
Exactly. And then we're going to hear Coco Taylor with Wang Dang Doodle.
Yes.
That was written by Willie Dixon, originally done by Helen Wolf, but it became the signature song for Coco Taylor.
And speaking of euphemisms, Wang Dang Doodle.
Yeah.
My Ding-a-ling and so on and so
on. And one thing I've mentioned before in my show is people like Willie Dixon writing songs like You Need Love for Muddy Waters, and Led Zeppelin a few years later doing A Whole Lot of Love.
Absolutely.
So Willie sued, and he won. He actually won that lawsuit.
Indeed.
Okay, we're going to get back to the music. This is Bessie Smith, if it cooperates. Tain't nobody's business if I do.
Tain't My breath since the day he left. heart since the day he left. Won't you bring him home to me? I know I had reasons, I just don't recall them all that well. Now, I took it much too far. I never heard the warning bell. Yeah, I had my chances. Now I'll just have to face the fact I turned away too long. Now there'll be no bring you back. Standing there, I felt the air just leave the room. Now I'm down here on my knees. Let me breathe. Just let me bring him home to me. Ah, let me breathe.
Let me breathe.
Just let me breathe for a moment. No, I can't catch my breath since the day he left. Won't you bring him home to me?
Just 91.7 FM, WMWM Salem. Here on the Juke Joint, brand new from Geneva Magnus. Just got it in about a week ago. The new CD is called Original, and this one is Let Me Breathe. All right, and we're going to say goodbye because she's got to go, and we got to get into some other music as well to Donna Halper. Once again, I will mention, okay, well, we never said your website.
We should.
DonnaHalper.com, right?
Yeah, pretty easy. www.DonnaHalper.com.
And the various books, I imagine, are the usual places like Amazon or...
And everywhere else, for that matter.
In some stores.
And in some stores, yes, indeed. One of the things I did want to mention before I left is how much has changed for women with regard to radio and television. If you had ever predicted back, like, in the 1950s when the only thing women did was, like, cooking shows and coming out on in low-cut gowns, you know, just sort of introducing the male host. Not that there's anything wrong with that, yeah. But it was like, it didn't matter if you had a PhD. That's all they would let you do. And today, we have someone like Diane Sawyer on ABC News, and she's the number one newscast, much to the consternation of people like Brian Williams, who have been around as long and can't imagine, like, how could this have happened? And the reality is, so much is different now. You no longer have people saying, well, if you're a woman, you can only do this, you can only do that. Now, it is still true that most stations are owned by men, whether radio or television. Most of the chair people of the board happen to be men. Mm-hmm. But I see so many gains in terms of news, in terms of talk. There are more women talk show hosts than there used to be in both the right and the left. There are many, many more women acting in lead roles, particularly women of color. Hit shows like Scandal, which, you know, Kerry Washington is nominated for just about everything you can be nominated for. I think it's great. In that regard, I think we really have seen major improvements. And for people that want to know more or just are interested in how things have changed, my new book is called Invisible Stars, A Social History of Women in American Broadcasting. It's a newly revised second edition. More than 50% of the first edition was rewritten entirely. There's new chapters. There's new everything. A lot of pictures, you know, just a lot of stuff that I think people, wherever they are, will find interesting. And I'm just so glad I had a chance to come and talk a little bit about this, and I thank you for the opportunity.
No problem. I will mention the other book, Boston Radio,
1920
to 2010.
Yes.
Certainly in the last, you know, 30, 40 pages, you're going to see a lot of people like Dennis and Callahan. You're going to see Charles Lacodera and Dan Ray. Oh, you know, all those type of people. But there's a lot of people before then. Bob and Ray.
Yes.
And then who's the woman you mentioned? Louise Morgan?
Louise Morgan, my cultural
was
hero.
It
the late great. Yes. The late great, yeah. Eunice Randall.
Yes.
Louise Morgan was on, I believe, on WNAC for many years. Right. And there used to be an all female radio station.
Yes.
The first all female radio station went on the air in 1927, WASN, Air Shopping News. Because,
shop,
of course, that, but that's
then,
the
yeah.
stereotype. It was, but what's interesting is the women on that show were all businesswomen. A number of them went on to long careers. I'm on the board of directors of the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the women on that station, a woman named Claire Crawford, went on to become the assistant director of sales for the Yankee Network. That
mm-hmm.
was unheard of back on in those
yeah.
days. She had like a 40-year career in broadcasting, and we just honored her posthumously and inducted her into the Mass Broadcasters Hall of Fame. So, yeah, a lot of things have changed, but there's still a lot of great music to look back on and a lot of great music that is coming out now and stations and podcasts so that people can hear it. Bob, thank you for being part of that, and thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, I love the idea of it. You actually asked if you could be on, and I said, as a matter of fact, not only would I like to have you on, I'd like to have you in person. And we can give you like a quick little 3-minute tour of the rest of the station.
Oh, my God. The palatial estate here.
It's going to take you a while. You know, one day I stopped in at WATD with a friend of mine from out of town, and Ed Perry gave us the Cook's tour, as
yes.
they call it. I just briefly said, oh, I've only been on for about 30 years at some station on the North Shore or whatever. And I was amazed at what they did. They were a true commercial station serving the South Shore, just as we serve the North Shore. They're a little bigger than us. They got their own building. Okay. But I can show you around just very briefly and as you head out. But it was a pleasure to have you on.
Thank
as well.
Thank you
and
so much.
Just the knowledge that you give forth. I would have loved to have had you. You should have taught at Salem State when I was a student here from 80 to 84.
Yeah,
it's too bad.
They never wanted me.
We had Vera Shepherd teaching radio broadcasting, and she was fine. But it would have been great to have you.
Well, I'm over at Lesley University. I was at Emerson for many years. I've been at Lesley for the past 6 years. They've been nothing but nice to me. And, you know, I'm going to be doing a lot of speaking engagements around. Maybe I'll put one of them up online so that people can see it if they haven't had enough of me for one day. And that's the story. Love to you all, and we will talk again soon.
Okay, so once again, we'll say goodbye to Donna Halper. You're welcome back. Just let me know when.
Thank you.
We're going to take you out with Yield Not to Temptation by Irma Thomas, Marsha Ball, and Tracy Nelson. And we've got some other fine stuff coming up as well. And what I will do, like I say, after we turn off the mic, I'll just briefly take you around, and then you'll be all set.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. Here's With Friends, Tracy. Here's Irma Thomas.
Oh, my love, while I'm away, don't you know you've got to be strong? Leave all the other girls alone. One bright sunny day, I'll be back home to stay. Yield not to temptation, and let no one